This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tee Clinic. Men's Tee Clinic is the team I trust with my total wellness optimization, and so should you. Five DFW locations with North Frisco, El Dorado Parkway at Dallas North Tollway now open. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEE or visit mensteeclinic.com.
It's hour three of the G-Bag Nation on 105.3 The Fan. Rangers GM Chris Young coming up in 20 minutes, and the Eric Kendrick Show is now 1 hour away. We'll be talking with the Cowboys linebacker here, top of the 5 o'clock hour. And it's time now for Woolchuck's Top 10 at 420. Here he is, the Woolly Bully, Zach with an H.
Thank you very much, General. 877-881-1053. What is a weird but good food combo that you enjoy? And this is in honor of the Texas State Fair. And I'll tell you why in just a moment. Eric's going to enjoy this. But I did see on Get Up this morning, Marcus Spears, a fellow LSU Tiger, Brian Broaddus's.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, you're part of the crew that drafted Marcus Spears. Hell of a draft pick there. DeMarcus Ware and Spears, first round.
Yep.
And that
good work.
11 and 20. Man, those were home run picks.
My last draft, 05.
Well, Marcus can now join Emmett, Michael, some of the other Cowboys that have been outspoken about this football team. And here's what he had to say about the Cowboys team building. And, well, does he really think they're trying to win?
Oops. I'm not convinced that Dallas really wants to win.
Yeah.
And that's hard for me because I'm a fan of Dallas. It's a lot of people in that building that I have a tremendous amount of respect for. I'm not convinced that they actually want to win, because there is no way you can look at the landscape of the NFL over the, let's just say, the last 2 to 3 years and think that you've been in position with your work in free agency to put yourself over the top. I sit home sometimes on the sofa with my feet up, and I listen to people say, well, the roster was good enough, and the roster did this, and they got to do this, and they just got to. It's not. It hasn't been. And it's something that I've been screaming. Like, 12 wins is great, but if we're talking about a Super Bowl, I want somebody. This is what I've been praying for, Dan Graziano. And you're a historian in the NFL.
Listen.
I want somebody to go back the last 5 years and tell me what team has won the Super Bowl only through the draft.
Yeah.
Just name one of them.
No, there hasn't been one.
So I can't. Like, every time you say that or somebody says that, I'm like, but the blueprint of winning a Super Bowl or making it to one has been to be aggressive in free agency.
Mm-hmm.
That's literally been the blueprint to get there. Now, the other argument, you remember me and Teddy Bruschi sat here this summer.
Yeah.
And I told him, I said, they not good enough, Teddy.
Yeah.
Oh, they good enough. They got Dak and they got, bro, Dallas got three people that you worry about on this football team. Mm-hmm. You can't win like that.
Yep.
And it's unfortunate, and it's not a good thing, but we the fans and everybody talk to me about why you – bro, they're not good enough to do it.
Yeah, I hope they don't want to win, because if they do want to win and they think this is the best way to go about doing that, then the problem's even worse. You know, I hope, especially with this year, that they're like, okay – we need a year to get our cap in order, so we're not spending anything this year. And we got to hope that the light bulb comes on, because he's right. The teams that are getting there, you either have one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, or you're so aggressive with the cap that you can get there with a Matt Stafford or with a 43-year-old Tom Brady and finish it.
Does he include teams that won Super Bowls before the salary cap?
Well, he's just said.
I mean, I'm asking the last five years. I mean, okay,
which would be the Chiefs three times.
Okay, and I'm glad he said the last 5 years, because
the Bucks and Rams.
I was sitting there thinking about all the, you know, San Francisco had a draft that where it was all. I mean, if you think about teams pre salary cap, they did it all the time.
Yeah. I mean, even pre 2010.
I mean, it
kind of changed from, it was a league that if you got in as a wild card team, you could go on this magical run. Now there's just a couple of teams that are better constructed and are so aggressive to make sure they don't have the big problems. So flawed rosters can't get it done. But the Cowboys still believe that's the best way to team build, is to pick the one spot that you're going to sacrifice. And if you don't want to have it all, then you can generally be, you know, a playoff team almost every year. And they think, like, just barely being a playoff team and is giving them as good of a chance as the teams that are super aggressive when it comes to free agency. And, you know, I share Marcus Spears' frustration. Honestly, it sounds like Marcus Spears has been listening to our show. you know, because it's just a head scratcher that smart people could genuinely come to these kind of conclusions on how to build a contender.
You can't do it. I mean, you're putting so much pressure on Will McClain, your scouting department, to ace the draft every single year.
Yeah.
If that's the only way you're going to and they've done for the most part outside of maybe the Mozzie year with Scooney in the second round. And I mean, we'll see. You know,
but that has set them back. Why have they gone from really good to now one of the worst?
They got worse in the offseason. They did.
Yeah.
And those guys aren't really stepping up for you right now. Like Jalen Tolbert, this was a year. And I get it. Like they said, all right, you're going to be our third receiver. We drafted you for this. We need you to step up. And he's looked better. Maybe as the course of the season goes on, maybe he will end up getting better. But right now, I don't think we're like overly confident. Defenses aren't like, oh, Jalen Tolbert's really scaring us right now, right?
No.
So, yeah, and no, the Chiefs they've signed a lot of free agents if you look at the 3 years they've won the Super Bowl. Orlando Brown Jr., they brought in at left tackle. Joe Tooney, who they brought in from New England. Juju Smith-Schuster, who was big for them in a Super Bowl win over the Eagles. Last year, Marquez Valdes-Scantling. Two safeties, the Honey Badger, Tyrann Mathieu, and Justin Reed.
That's the other thing is they have Mahomes.
They do, but
they have a guy that gives you an edge, and they're spending more than the Cowboys.
Right.
Yeah.
And they've also made, hey, we're not going to always pay our guy. Like most teams probably are paying Tyreek Hill. They said, we're going to go ahead and not do that. We're going to trade him. We're going to get assets. And yes, when you have Mahomes and Reed, maybe you're able to do that. But all last year, that offense looked terrible. Then finally in the postseason, because Mahomes is Mahomes, somehow all of a sudden, and Travis Kelce, of course, they end up elevating their level of play. But they also let Legarius Sneed go at corner.
Yeah, that's the big one, I think, too. That is the underlying one, which is they're willing to say, yes, we acknowledge your greatness, Tyreek Hill, but we are willing to move on from you. And the Cowboys haven't shown they're willing to do that with star players. They end up acquiescing every time. They play hardball the whole time, and then they cave in. That's what they do. The Chiefs did something different there. And now they've done it again, as you mentioned, with Legarius Sneed, and they do draft extremely well. But, I mean, you say Andy Reid and Pat Mahomes. It's obviously difficult to find those things, especially finding a Pat Mahomes, but you should have an Andy Reid. There's no excuse for you not to have an Andy Reid. You're the most powerful franchise in the sport. If you actually wanted to win, you could go get the best coach anytime you want. There's no salary cap on it, nothing. You have more resources than anybody. If you just had the desire, you can go get the right coach. They refuse to identify it.
And you're absolutely right, 2-4. Their defense has been outstanding, and it definitely was last year. I mean, they were brilliant, and hey, the one guy they paid, Chris Jones, defensive tackle, in the middle. And that's one position the Cowboys just haven't seemed to have ever since Jay Ratliff.
Yeah. And then, you know, things like that, what Troy Aikman did. You know, I have one set of stats in the regular season. When the playoffs come, I'm going to elevate my level. I'm going to limit the mistakes even more and make sure that when I do risk the football, it's because that's what the game absolutely demands of me right now.
Dude, amen. Chris Jones, perfect example. He's a guy that fourth quarter, big moments, big plays, big games, postseason, he is the best version of himself. Mahomes is the same way. Kelsey's been the same way.
You need Micah to do that.
Yes. You need all your guys. You need CD to do that.
But specifically the guys that you're paying. Like those are the guys they've committed big money to. I don't know if the Cowboys have really gotten the return on their investment when it comes to the guys that they've given big money to.
Yeah, not when it matters.
Not at all.
For sure.
Not at all. All right, let's get into the top 10. The top 10 weird but good food combos that people are eating out there. 877-881-1053.
Have you looked at I'm just curious about this. Did you look at the 2023 Kansas City Chiefs and see what free agents they signed?
No.
Did you look at
Byron Coward, Matt Dickerson,
Mike Edwards, Blaine Gabbert, Sebastian Gutierrez, Phil Hodgkins, Lamar Jackson, the cornerback from the Broncos, Richie James, Charles Omenihu, Donovan Smith.
That was Omenihu was pretty big for them.
Yep. Donovan Smith, Juwan Taylor, started. Drew Tranquil, Taylor Chris started. Williams.
Yeah. So they had four starters there.
Four starters.
Yeah, both those tackles started. Omenihu started.
So the biggest additions were of all those guys they signed, they got two players out, the two tackles, right?
Yeah.
That was their biggest signs.
It's not like you've got to go and build your entire team in free agency, but you got to at least bring in a couple of players that are going to really help you.
And it was the year before that they loaded up on all of the offensive linemen and retooled some things after losing to Tom and the Bucks in the Super Bowl and realizing, okay, we got to get some new blood in here.
Yeah.
I'm just curious at who all these. I mean, I'm going to go through and look at all these guys who they signed.
Yeah,
you know,
please
many,
do it.
How many? I mean, because like I said, if you look, okay, how about for the, let's see, the draft? That's the Rams. Let me see if I can get to go ahead and start your list.
We'll circle back to that when you've got the names. We got a lot of good texts coming in. Pimento cheese with chocolate milk. That's interesting. Mayo and ramen noodles. Spicy nuggets with chocolate frosty from Wendy's is bomb. That's interesting.
Yeah,
I could see that.
For sure. With the french fries and stuff too?
Yeah.
Doing the dipski?
Yeah. I mean, the fries and the shake, like that's one. I mean, do you guys have any weird food combos that you're like?
I always think that Italian food and salads don't work well together.
Huh?
One is hot, you know, and then one is cold.
Like eating them on the same plate?
Yeah, on the same plate with the dressing and the marinara kind of commingles.
Okay, because at all, like that's the whole Olive Garden deal. Like I'm going for the endless salad and the
I went that the other day. Right. Yeah.
But I get it maybe on the same plate.
Keep it separated.
Right.
Yeah.
What about you, Lucius?
You don't like the yams and the greens touching? You don't like that?
I don't. Man. I don't like the sweets touching the vinegar of the dressing.
You don't put it on the same fork sometimes?
Mm-mm.
Man. No. Okay.
There's certain things that will cross over, but those are, you know, ones that don't.
So do you attack one food at a time on your plate, or are you just, oh, wow.
Yeah, I don't, and I really don't want my maple syrup leaking onto my omelet.
Jeez.
I feel like the omelet is almost ruined.
Crazy. Jeez, dude. Wow. I love the syrup.
I kind of like
and now it's in sausage, and there's pancake, and there's
sausage.
It's
good.
There's hash brown. Yeah, the sausage.
Syrup on the sausage.
It's a blessing. Special.
Yeah, it is, man.
Woolchuck, let's see. Popcorn and Louisiana hot sauce.
Okay, can see that being good.
Try that.
Avocado slices and honey.
Oh, I've never tried that.
That's pretty good.
Avocado slices and honey.
The honey just, it's good on everything.
Everything.
I like the honey on the eggs, dude.
Yes.
I know that honey might creep you out a little bit.
Yeah, me
honey
too.
On the eggs.
Me too. On chicken. On. I take a spoonful of honey every morning, help with the allergies type of vibe.
That's smart.
Game changer. You gotta get that local honey.
Yeah, local
joint.
That's smart.
I usually go honey oatmeal.
With some walnuts in it. Ooh, wee.
Peanut butter and dill pickles.
Wow, that's weird.
That's very weird.
Mustard on Snickers.
My God.
Would you do that?
That's bad.
Because we got a mustard beer coming out. Fletcher's Corn Dog is announcing a mustard beer that they're going to debut at the state fair this year.
I think ketchup has the potential to make things weird more so than mustard, if you ask me. Like, you put ketchup on a steak, ketchup on tacos, ketchup on chicken strips. All of a sudden, like, this really core... You know, a condiment that America has an obsession with, it throws everything off to me.
Number 10, according to Tasty, weird foods that are actually good combos together. Number 10, I love slicing up dill pickles in my mac and cheese. Sounds disgusting, but I love the little crunch with a bite of creamy cheese. No shame.
That's weird.
I cannot wait to pull all of these. Are you reading them first person?
Yeah. Number 9. Beef flavored ramen noodles with some peanut butter. It sounds weird, but it gives you that delicious Thai peanutty taste.
Okay.
I
can see it. Yeah, you've kind of sold me, but I do wonder like how we're executing this. Are we stirring up a peanut butter spoon inside the hot soup here?
Yeah, I wonder as well how's it diluted. I think a big key there would be like to take most of the water out so you can get more of a paste going.
Yeah, okay.
Yes, I think you're right.
All right, look at us connecting.
8, and I got this on Twitter as well, and I have heard of this one, a slice of cheese, think like a Kraft Singles, melted on top of apple pie.
Yeah, can't do it.
But don't go for the cheap cheese.
So you don't like the Kraft
Singles? If you're doing a Kraft Single,
you're
urinating on the pie.
Yeah, go for a really good cheese and do that. That's not a bad combination there.
This one I have kind of fought against, but I don't know, people do like this. I make tuna salad with pretty much whatever fruit is in my fridge.
Yes,
diced grapes, chopped apples or pears, mandarin oranges. Yes. Learned it from my dad, and I used to find it repulsive, but as I've gotten older, it's been
a great
fantastic.
Combination. Yeah, absolutely.
920 ketchup on tacos. What the bleep? It's a thing from the 80s, man, in the North. You know, we didn't have a lot of taco-eating folks around to learn from, so we were doing our best with the pictures we saw on TV.
Mm-hmm.
Number 6, you probably heard of dipping french fries in a milkshake, but hear me out. Chicken nuggets dipped in a milkshake.
Yeah.
Just like the spicy nuggets in the frosty.
Yeah.
Mm. Number 5, french fries and powdered sugar. I learned this accidentally at the beach when the wind flipped my funnel cake over in my bucket of french fries.
Okay, I was going to say, this is kind of like french fry funnel cake.
Yeah, it's grease and... Yeah, it's greasy.
Sounds good.
I do think powdered sugar might be the most slept on like additive.
Mm-hmm. You know, you're right, because I never think about adding powdered sugar, but I'm not going to knock it. Why not? It's good.
We'd go over to my aunt's house growing up, and it was like Eggo waffles with syrup and the powdered sugar and whatever else, chocolate chips.
She had
like
a dang bar out there. God. She had an Eggo bar.
But you're keeping it just for breakfast stuff. You ain't putting it on like...
Yeah, for the most part, yeah, French toast.
Yeah, you're saying slept on in a way of like, yeah, for breakfast things.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not thinking you're going to put it on your like loaded baked potato or anything like
that,
right?
No, sir. Okay. Yeah, mostly desserts and breakfast.
You could be onto something there. It could be delicious.
Yeah.
Number four, dill pickles with sharp cheddar cheese and chunky peanut butter. I developed this snack when my wife was pregnant, and it has become a mainstay in our home.
Okay.
That sounds awful.
The pickles and cheese is kind of a charcuterie board thing, but, you know.
The peanut butter, yeah, it looks gross, too. Number three, one combination I love is potato chips dipped into chocolate, peanut butter, and banana smoothie. It was one of the things I craved when I was pregnant, but I really have to try it again one of these days.
Salt and sweet. Yeah.
Man.
Number two, balsamic vinegar on ice cream is incredible. But you have to use good, thick balsamic, not that grocery store trash.
Man, that's a very, very weird one. How about this?
I wouldn't even know how to source that.
I don't either.
Balsamic vinegar and strawberries is good.
Mm. Yep, absolutely it is.
We have the...
I might need to try some of these.
The 254 Twinkies and queso.
Ooh. Oh,
God.
I'm just going to
say... I would knock that.
That back is wide. You feel what I'm saying?
He basically is creating Twinkie nachos is what he's doing. He's taking Twinkies and he's smothering them in cheese.
This is not probably a weird combination, but if you use pork rinds instead of chips in your queso,
it's much better.
Some of those pork rinds, I'm exploring all kinds of them right now. They have some sort of a creamy texture inside of them. I definitely don't like those.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Number one, and you said the balsamic vinegar and the strawberries, mm-hmm. Lucius. They do strawberries and black pepper. The pepper somehow enhances the strawberry flavor without making it spicy.
Okay.
And three cheese, that's really good.
So there's your top 10. Weird, but good food.
That was very weird.
Japanese barbecue sauce on my salad. That kind of interesting.
Okay. Yeah. Good list, Wolchuk.
We got to run because CY is set to join us. We'll chat with the Rangers GM for the final time in this 2024 baseball season. It's next on your Home of the Champs. Welcome back, Nation. It's time now for the Chris Young Show here on your Home of the Rangers, 105.3 The Fan. CY Show is brought to you by PlayScore and Anheuser-Busch. Segments brought to you by Soda. Pregame at 8 o'clock tonight. First pitch about 8:37 here as CY joins you now here on The Fan. And a good afternoon, sir. How the heck are you?
Hey, guys. I'm well. How are you all?
Oh, we're doing about the same. You know, schedule finishing up here late summer. I was wondering, are you relieved that we get to take this season out to the back 40 and just be done with it for good? Or how are you looking at the final week?
Well, it's funny. I was in Boach's office 2 days ago, and he said, "CY, what do you want to see this final week?" And I said, "Boach, I want to win. I want to win. That's the most important part to me. I want to come out and play good baseball for the last week and go out and close out 2024 on a winning note, and then we turn the page and we move on to 2025. And, maybe it's just the competitor in me. I know there are a lot of young guys that, we'd like to see. But that said, I want to put a winning team out on the field. I want to finish strong. And I want to play the baseball that I think we're capable of playing. And if we do that, I think we'll finish. We'll have a good road trip here and finish the way we want.
Well, that'd be a good way to head off into the offseason. Now, what do you think about the last series in Oakland for the Rangers? Is this a place rich in baseball history? What first comes to mind for you?
Yeah, it's funny. I pulled into the stadium here this afternoon in the parking lot, and there are already fans lined up at the lot waiting to get in. And I've spent a lot of time here as a player, and I like this place. I mean, there's a lot of history here, a lot of great players, a lot of great teams that have come through Oakland. And it's sad. It's sad for baseball that they're leaving, but I am happy that we're here to close it out. I do have fond memories of pitching here, of playing against the A's, and it's a great environment. When the place is full and the fans are here, they're rowdy, and it creates a great environment. I think that's what we're going to expect these last three games here, and I'm excited to see it, and I just hope we play well and find a way to win in a rowdy environment.
One of the few ballparks where you might have a possum sneak up on you or something, huh?
You hope it's a possum. There may be bigger than that. So, but yes. But no, it is. I mean, it's an old ballpark. It's run down. The amenities are not the best. But I always thought that was part of the A's identity, too, is that they found a way to embrace that and just sort of have a chip on their shoulder and There wasn't much, there weren't many frills of being a player in Oakland, but they always have put together good teams and they play hard. And this year's team is no different. Mark Kotze has got them playing very, very hard. And the guys seem to embrace kind of the blue collar mentality that exists in playing in the Coliseum.
One of the positives to the end of this season has certainly been the way Wyatt Langford's been playing. Had another home run over the weekend. How impressive is this for him as you look at his season coming to an end and the excitement heading into next year?
Yeah, I mean, I can speak from personal experience. In your first full season, by the end of September, it's a mental grind. You've never been through a season that long in your life. You've never played this many games in your life. And so you kind of hope to get to the finish line. You don't expect to sprint through it. And Wyatt is accelerating as he's reaching the finish line. And it's really fun to see. I think it speaks to Wyatt's aptitude, the adjustments he's made over the course of the season, his mentality of getting better, not letting things faze him, and just taking it day to day. And he's got all the attributes of a really, really good player. And to see what he's done over the last 6 weeks and the way he's come on strong, it's so exciting to think about what he's going to be in 2025 and beyond.
CY, I know you have games still in hand that you have to finish out. I was just curious, in the NFL, we have with the exit interviews and stuff like that, we always met with the players and talk with them and kind of told them our ideas of what we need to do for the offseason. Do they do the same thing in baseball? Do you meet with everybody when the season's over with and kind of get ideas going forward?
Yes, it's why I'm on the trip. And we'll meet with every player. Boach and I will meet with every player and really lay out the season, what we saw, what we think needs to improve as we go into the off season, areas of focus and where players can get better, and what we want collectively as a team going into the winter and coming back next year. I think it sets a tone and an expectation. I never, actually, believe it or not, in baseball, it's not something that's commonly done. And so right. I never had that as a player. Not one team I was on had exit interviews. I've done it 3 of the 4 years I've been here, with the one exception being last year, when there was the best kind of ending to the season you could possibly have.
Sure.
We didn't have the time to do those types of interviews. But this year we are doing them. We're doing them this week over the course of the road trip. And we'll do the same with the coaches when we get back to Arlington after the road trip.
Well, as we talked with you about last week, the excitement with having Rocker and DeGrom and getting to see them pitch, have you formulated a plan at all for them moving into next year? Do you have to monitor their innings at all?
Yeah, we'll approach that as we get into next year in the off season. We'll talk with the medical group and the performance department, really decide what the right threshold of innings is. And I think it's not just the innings. It's the way we manage their starts and how many starts they do on 4 days rest, how many starts they do on 5, when we need to skip a start, stuff like that. Looking at different pockets of the schedule where we may play 17 in a row or, 30 out of 31 and deciding that, okay, this may be a good stretch where we skip a start, or at some point, if they're looking fatigued, we IL somebody to make sure that they have ample recovery time and stay strong throughout the season. So there's a number of ways to manage that. It's a bunch of strategic conversations and decisions that we'll get into as the off season gets underway here. And really, as we get into spring training, we'll have a specific plan for each player.
Put into context what Rocker's last start means for, his foreseeable future. Is it relevant at all that, maybe you had more base runners than you would like, or is that just part of the recovery process?
I think it's just part of the natural assimilation of a major league starter. He needs time, and there are going to be moments where he's not feeling his best or he doesn't have his best command and he's going to run into trouble. And he navigated those really well. We made an error that cost him 2 earned runs. Otherwise, I felt like despite not having his best stuff, he gave us a chance to win. And, that's the making of a good pitcher when on the days you're not feeling great that you can go out and still compete. And so I think we saw that. Now, my hope is that this last start, it's going to be a fun start, the last game here at the Coliseum, and it'll be a rowdy crowd, a day game, an environment which he's never seen. My hope is that he finishes strong and ends on a real positive outing and builds momentum into the off season. But, the natural, it's going to take him. I don't think we'll know what Kumar is going to truly be, without seeing him at least, 20 starts in the big leagues.
See, why my question for you then is, do you anticipate any changes within the staff? I know that's something you probably have to sit down and talk about with Boach and stuff, but You anticipate any changes with your staff going forward?
Yeah, Butch and I haven't had the discussion yet, but I will say I believe in the staff we have. I think they're a great staff. They're very talented. It's the same staff that won the World Series last year, and while we've come up short this year, I know it's no fault of the staff in terms of the effort, the energy, the commitment, and the dedication that they've shown to the organization and to the players themselves. So what I don't know is, you know, how many of them will have external opportunities. Sure. There may be some callings on staff members, and in which case we need to reevaluate and decide the best way to backfill if we lose any staff members. But, you know, I can't say perfectly if there will be changes right now, but that's a conversation Boach and I will have in the coming days, and at which point we'll evaluate the best way to structure the staff going forward. And some of that may be dependent upon what, you know, what transpires externally with job openings throughout the industry.
And Josh Young with the hand, he's obviously shut down. What's his outlook as it pertains to that?
Yeah, we're trying to get some answers there. And I think that it's been frustrating for Josh. He's such a hard worker and he's so committed. And to have him have a little bit of a setback right now, it's been hard for him. I know he wanted to finish the season strong, but this thing flared up just a little bit. And it's, you know, it's kind of normal where they put a plate into his wrist to stabilize the bone, but there's a tendon that runs along that plate that has continued to get irritated. And so I think we have to step back and evaluate the best way to mitigate this and manage it moving forward. And we hope to have answers within the next 4 or 5 days as to what that looks like.
It's Chris Young here with us. You know, here on the radio side, we entertain all kinds of ideas and scenarios. Is the thought of a Corey Seager transitioning to first base something that's relevant in your world at all?
Well, you know, if Corey was struggling at shortstop, we may consider that. But Corey has been so good at short. He's played a great defense. He grades out very well in all our objective defensive metrics and external metrics from third parties. So I think that right now he's really a premier shortstop. And there may come a time at which Corey, his body doesn't allow him to play short. But that time is not now. And we have high, high level of confidence that Corey will bounce back and be healthy next year and play a great shortstop for us.
See why it's going to be the 24th year that Major League Baseball does not have a repeat champ. That'll be 25 next year when, of course, you and the Texas Rangers are back winning the World Series. But if somebody were to say, hey, what were some of the biggest things you learned and challenges when it comes to repeating outside of the injuries? Because you were snake bitten this year. What are some of your thoughts reflecting back on that?
Well, you know, I think that, and I experienced this as a player in 2015 going into the 2016 season in Kansas City when we won the World Series. And I think that as a player, it's natural that you have this emotional month where you reach the pinnacle of the game and you win. And then you start your off season and you need time mentally and physically to recover. And then you're kind of behind the eight ball. So the off season accelerates on you. And then you get into spring training and you think, okay, I got to ease into it because I'm not as far along as I was last year when there was a full off season. And all of a sudden you look up and you get into May and June and you're a little bit behind the eight ball still because you haven't sped up and caught up in terms of the work that you've missed out on. And I'm not sure there's a perfect way to avoid that aside from just making sure that you really have the same complete off season and do it with the same edge and mentality as you did in the losing seasons. And it may be just natural that guys do let down their guard a little bit after they win. And I saw that in Kansas City. And I think one of the things that's important about this game is that you really never arrive. There are very few players that ever have this, you know, have the job security and they fully arrived in this game. And so I think for all of our guys to stay hungry, to stay focused and continue to work, because the off season is the foundation in terms of what you can expect during the regular season. If you don't build that good, strong foundation in the off season, it's really hard to catch up during the season.
And of course, that foundation in pro sports all, you know, flows from capital. TV money going to be right next year? Do you anticipate it'll impact your budget again, or what do we know about that?
Well, I mean, to some degree, I don't know exactly the extent to which it will, but we'll have those conversations when I get back next week. I'll sit down with Ray and our ownership and really look at what next year looks like in terms of revenues and our TV money, and we'll formulate the best plan possible to put a winning team out on the field. But I am very excited about the core group that we have, and I'm very confident that if we, you know, run this group out there and they all have great off seasons and come back motivated and hungry, that this team can be capable of winning and doing special things. And it's up to us to really fill out the rest of the roster around the core group that we have. And I'm looking forward to doing that.
Yeah, can't wait to get a chance to catch up with you maybe in the off season. Probably our last chat till then.
Anytime, guys. I really appreciate it. I appreciate all the support that you guys have provided this year in a tough year. And really to all the fans listening, I just want to say a big thank you for what has been really the most special 10 or 11 months in Texas Rangers history. And throughout the community, hearing so many people, their gratitude and support for our organization, the fanfare, seeing kids and fans wearing the Ranger tee with pride throughout DFW. It's been such a rewarding experience, and while I regret that we're not going to be back in the playoffs and having a chance to compete for a World Series this year, it has meant so much to me and everybody affiliated with the Rangers to have the support that we have, and I can't wait to get back to work and bounce back in 2025. So thank you. Thank you to all our fans, and looking forward to a great offseason.
We'll see why. We can't wait to read the book on, because you're a pro's pro about the way you handle your job, and thanks for being so great to us as a station. We love interviewing you every week. You're a stand-up guy, and again, thank you for everything you've done for us to educate us as baseball fans, for sure.
No, guys, the feeling's mutual. You guys do a great job, and just the support and love that you guys bleed for our organization, I can't thank you enough for it. So go, let's have a great last week here, and thanks again, and I'll join you anytime you have time for me this offseason.
Heck yeah, we'll drink to that, buddy. Have a great week. We'll catch up with you soon.
Thanks, guys.
Chris Young brought to you by PlayScore and Anheuser-Busch. Usually every Monday at 4:20 here in the G-Bag Nation. That'll do it probably until the Rangers toy drive.
Yeah.
We'll be out there and we'll be gathering toys, and we'll be getting tickets to an upcoming Ranger game, and hopefully see why I'll have a bounty of talent accrued. You know, at that point, probably December, mid-December, something like that. Okay, Mark Schlereth, talking NFL with him, and he joins us next year on 105 Through the Fan. Thank you, Lucius. Eric Kendricks, Cowboys Player Show. He is coming up here at the top of the hour. We're joined now by Odyssey NFL insider Mark Schlereth, host of the Stinkin' Truth podcast. Insider calls are brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. May your game day be delicious. And a good afternoon to you, Mark. How the heck are you?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
Well, you know, we're doing pretty good. I think just generally around the Cowboys right now, we're just wondering, how bad is this football team?
Yeah, that's a great question. Obviously, like, you look at the Cowboys, and I think, you know, the big things that always seem to crop up is they don't have any problem, you know, handling the bad teams, but when a good team comes to town and a good physical team comes to town, they get absolutely mollywopped. And that's a concern. You know, every time you look over the last couple of years, when a good rushing team comes into town, they're putting up 150 plus. I mean, it is just like poop through a goose. And that's something that is like, hey man, you know, I'm going to say it, and this is a dirty four-letter word in the National Football League. It's soft. Yeah. And that is something that you call anybody that plays in the National Football League soft. Those are fighting words. So I'm going to hide New York while I call them soft. But, like, you give up 189 yards rushing, sorry. Like, I don't know what else to call you. And that has been a consistent theme when they face one of those teams that can really be physical and control line of scrimmage. They get run through. And, you know, at some point, you got to put your foot down and say that's not going to happen anymore. And whether that's players doing a better job assignment football-wise, or whether that's coaches just saying, hey, listen, man, we'll put nine guys in the box if we have to and play zero, but you ain't running it down our throats anymore.
Hey, Mark, I was wondering, you know, we do the post-game show here, and three different times on the podium, the head coach was talking about preparation. The players in the locker room were talking about preparation and lack of it. Is that something that immediately got my attention when you start talking about those kinds of things? Is, as a player, would you be worried if your teammates were saying that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I played professional football.
Sure.
I'm a professional football player. And just because you play a pro sport doesn't make you a professional. And that would scare me, because ultimately you are not being a professional. You are not taking care of your teammates. And listen, man, championship teams play for a bigger cause than themselves. They play for each other. And if you want to be a championship team, it's got to be sacrificial. You know, I got this text the other day from one of the guys that that I kind of do some stuff with and you know, and share scriptures and things of that nature with. And I think it mentions in the Bible leadership 6 times. It mentions being a servant hundreds of times. And ultimately, if you're not willing to serve one another, if you're not willing to sacrifice one another, I mean, you're not willing to be a professional to make sure your assignment's sound, to make sure you don't line up in the right place. Like, your time at doing whatever it is you're doing is more valuable, whether it's, you know, just not studying, playing video games, watching TV, whatever, you know, whatever your thing is. If you can't line up in the right spot, like, it's not that important to you. It's not that important to you for your team. Like, I don't want you on my team. Sorry. You're not a guy that I can count on. That would absolutely destroy me. And I heard Dak Prescott talk about professionalism as well.
Sure.
Like, you can't line up in the right spot. You're kidding me, right?
Is it ever an issue when players are bickering at each other or venting at each other, arguing during a time like this?
Well, you know, I mean, the bickering and stuff comes when some guys just aren't doing what they're supposed to be doing. And, you know, you'd like to be able to rectify that internally, right? You'd like to be able to go address that and fix it. But I'm telling you what, it is, you know, it's a concerning thing. And so, yeah, we've talked about it on the Breakfast Ball show that I do here in New York. And, you know, and obviously it's a big deal, but you can't win that way with a lack of professionalism. And then ultimately it comes down to a lack of leadership. You're either coaching that or you're allowing it to happen. Which one is it? Are you coaching unprofessionalism, or are you just allowing them to be unprofessional? So, like, and part of that is not Mike McCarthy's fault, because, like, what authority has he been given? Do you have the authority to cut guys? Do you have the authority to not play guys? Do you have the authority to just say, I don't care how good this player is, he doesn't do the right thing, he's not in the right spot, he's not going to play? Like, again, that's an organizational. This is the thing I always say about the Dallas Cowboys. You know, when your owner is doing, you know, biweekly radio shows, I know it's great. I know it's great for the stations. You know, everybody loves that. And he's holding press conferences afterwards. And you know, you appoint coaches, but you don't empower coaches. That is, you know, it's never a good situation. And, you know, and then players, I mean, I know how I was a player. I know how it works when you're a player. When your coach doesn't truly have authority, you know what you don't do? You don't listen to him sometimes. You know, I mean, hey, Mike Shanahan, I played for Mike Shanahan. Mike Shanahan would cut your ass in 2 seconds if you weren't in the right spot, but then he might ask you out for pizza afterwards. Like, he had, there was no, like, it was one of those things where you have reverence and respect for your head coach, because you have reverence for him because he puts you in the right spot to win, and he understands what it is to win, and Mike McCarthy knows that. But you also have this, I always talk about two types of fear. There is the biblical sense of fear, which is an awesome reverence and respect for the guy because of what he is, how he operates, what he does, all those things. And then there's the other type of fear, the fear where he will cut my ass in 2 seconds if I don't do my job. And I don't believe that exists in Dallas.
Stink, how scary are the Commanders?
Listen, they're a ways away. They're a ways away, talent wise, from being really good. But they have something that are, you know, they have some things from Dan Quinn that are non-negotiable. And those non-negotiables are, we're going to play for one another, which obviously you don't have in Dallas right now. And we're going to play a physical brand of football. Like, we may get beat because we don't have the talent level that's required to be great at every level, but at the end of the day, you're going to know you're in a fistfight. And those are non-negotiables for Dan Quinn. And now with the quarterback, what he did the other night and what they did as an offense, like they're running the ball. Listen, man, that's the fifth leading rushing team in football coming out of last night, I believe. Like they're going to run the snot out of the ball, not only attempts, but Brian Robinson going to beat you up running the ball. And they're going to lean into that. And then, you know, Jaden Daniels is going to run the ball as well. But they're going to lean into that physicality. And at the end of the day, they may not win, but you're going to know you were involved in a football game. There's no patty cake going on there with the Washington Commanders.
Great football truths, Mark. Sorry we don't have more time for you here this week. We got to run, but have a great week, and we'll catch up with you soon.
You got it. All the best. Take care.
Salute. Odyssey NFL insider Mark Schlereth, host of the Stinkin' Truth podcast. Insider calls brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. Mayo game day. Be delicious. Now, we do got to run because Eric Kendricks, Cowboys player show, he's ready right at the top. And we're back with the Cowboys starting middle linebacker next right here, the G-Bag Nation on 105.3 The Fan.